Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown 538 Sports Podcast. This week we have a little bit of a different episode. We have a stat school coming up for you. But before we get to that, and that stat school we should mention is about soccer. But before we get to that, we've got a little special conversation with some voices that you're used to hearing in this feed. Those voices belong to the immortal Neil Payne. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Chad.
Neil's sports writer and editor at 538, and our producer, Hot Takedowns producer, Joe Sykes. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Chad. How's it going?
So I've called you both in here today to explain what people are going to be seeing and hearing in their Hot Takedown feeds as early as this week. It's a little podcast documentary series that you guys have been secretly toiling over in the studio for the last 3 months. It's called Ahead of Their Time.
That's right, Chad. That's what it's called.
Why is it called that, Joe?
So the idea originally was to kind of find sports players and teams and coaches who were kind of doing something radical and inventive but weren't really recognized. And then, you know, we're 538. We love data. We love analytics. And, you know, to kind of show how those people were proved right over time by data and analytics. And I think we've pretty much followed that formula. We've got five episodes. You know, they all have a kind of data-y theme, but they're very much stories. You know, they're great stories. And I'm really excited to share them. Myself and Neil are really excited to share them with our listeners.
So each episode covers its own person or thing that was ahead of its time, is that right?
Correct, yeah. It's usually a person.
Okay.
And kind of an individual who was maybe like a visionary in their era, and then, you know, were eventually vindicated by the metrics later.
Excellent. And you talked to some of these people themselves, so we're going to hear from the people or people who were around at the time?
We did, yeah. At least three of the stories have
the subject
themselves. The one, but I'll sort of give you a taste of what's to come on Thursday. We are doing a story about the defensive shift. So Lou Boudreau and Ted Williams and the defensive shift. Not going to give away too much, but that kind of then gets into how the shift was brought back by analytics and by Joe Maddon, and kind of how modern players have had to try and work out what the hell do you do when you come up against this, like, crazy tactic.
Cool. Excellent. All right. So, Neil, you are narrating these five audio documentaries?
They decided for some odd reason to have me be the voice of this series.
Neil, you are the stat man. That is the reason.
I guess.
There are never odd reasons why you get an honor. Okay, Hot Takedown listeners, keep an eye out for Ahead of Their Time in your Hot Takedown feed starting this Thursday, and it will be weekly from there on out. It'll also be on 538.com. They should be really great. And if you like Hot Takedown, thinking about the way that analytics has affected sports and the way that you can interpret sports through a bit more of an empirical lens, these are actual stories, storytelling stories that go from point A to point B and really take you through a narrative of how analytics grew from the bottom up, basically, in each sport. Joe, Neil, I look forward to listening.
Cool. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Chad.
All right. Now let's move on to our more traditional, but still not a totally normal Hot Takedown. It's a stat school with ESPN's Mike Goodman. Enjoy.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
One day I understand. One day go see the baby be born and come back. You're a Major League Baseball player.
Did I not tell you?
Yes, you did.
See, don't answer. These are rhetorical questions because you know I told you and you know I'm not.
Analytics don't work at all.
It's just a crap to some people who were really smart made up to try to get in the game because they had no talent.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bowed. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win.
Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown, 538's sports podcast. I'm Chad McMatlin, an editor at 538. With me in the studio, we've got a special guest today. We'll get to him last. First, across the table, Kate Fagan. Kate, you're looking regal today.
Really? Yeah. Do you think it's the new jacket that I
think,
I own?
Yeah, it's got a nice shine.
It's got to be the jacket.
It's got a nice shine.
A little silver here
yeah.
that makes it look almost like I'm like a queen or something.
Yeah, I like it.
That could be it. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Kate. Welcome back to the studio. Neil Payne. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Chad. What's up?
Neil, you're looking
haggard.
Somewhere between a plebeian
and royalty.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes
sense.
We
won't point out which level, though.
Right, exactly. I'm not allowed to make eye contact with Kate during the episode, which is going to make it tough to figure out.
That's
a rule
I set out at the beginning today.
You didn't hear that, Chad?
No jacket. You
didn't... bow down before Kate Fagan. And the fourth person in the studio, our forever global soccer liaison to the stars. It's Mike Goodman. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Mike, you're in the studio.
I know. It's crazy. You guys are all much smaller in person than on TV. I guess that only counts for Kate, but...
Yeah, I was going to say...
I haven't seen you guys on TV.
When were you guys on
ESPN
TV?
ESPN been simulcasting this taping? So Mike, of course, is a writer for ESPN around soccer and its various performances on the global stage. And Mike, today you are here to do a stat school.
Yes. No pressure.
Now, usually for new listeners, stat school is something in which we... in which Kate and I play dumb. are dumb. And Neil, the stat man, Payne, takes us through sort of the in ascending difficulty stats from their most basic level, then up to their most advanced, shall we say. Neil, how much do you know about soccer?
I know a little bit, but nowhere near as much as Mike knows. So it's nice to have the kind of burden of this off of my shoulders. I've removed the Statman cape.
I was going to say, speaking of royalty, the cape has come off.
I've affixed it to Mike, who's also wearing a Latvian hat he was telling me about before. So this is kind of like a special addition to the Statman accoutrement.
I didn't realize I had hat game to live up to, so yeah. I guess I lucked out.
All right, so Mike, we're gonna talk about... soccer today. Is it going to be English Premier League soccer specific, or we're just talking about soccer stats overall?
Most of the stuff is pretty broadly applicable. I think we've done more with it in the Premier League just because that tends to be like the biggest national most league that gets the most attention. But I mean, the processes, like how you do it and where stats are collected, is pretty universal.
Okay, so usually, as I said, we run through one type of stat from basic to advanced. As we were planning this podcast, you said that.
Yeah, that's not really going to work because we haven't had stats for that long in soccer. Like that's one of the cool things, or at least the different things about soccer, is that the analytics discussion in most sports, you know, it's painted as not, you know, stats versus not stats, but it's not really that, right? It's new stats versus old stats. It's stats that people aren't necessarily comfortable with versus the ones they've been used to for 50 or 100 years. Soccer hasn't had stats other than goals until about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And even about 20 years ago, it was just assists.
Is that because there weren't box scores? It's not really like a box score kind of sport?
It's really, really hard to compile numbers for soccer. It's a really fluid game. So you can't just have somebody sitting in the stands keeping track with a scorecard. There may be other reasons. It was, for a long time, the people that watched soccer were the people in the stadium rather than listening on the radio or watching on TV. And so the newspaper coverage tended to be more reflective of that, so it tended to be more the narrative of what happened over the course of the game. But for whatever reason, I mean, nobody really kept – or almost nobody really kept track of these things except goals.
And so, okay, so because it was just goals, how did that limit our knowledge of what – people were actually doing?
A lot. I mean, you know...
Because goals are important.
I mean, goals are the most important thing. There's also almost none of them, right? Like, there's only, like, you know, three goals in a game is a lot of goals. And so it's very hard to separate out over the course of a 90-minute game what matters and what doesn't if all you have are those relatively small end
products. Especially because, like... half, if not more, of the players aren't even supposed to score goals.
Right, for sure.
So they can go entire careers and not have a goal, and yet that's the only measurement by which, broadly, we judge soccer.
Yeah, so no one was tracking tackles, even?
Not as such, no. Not like counting them in any rigorous way.
Huh. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of hockey. I think that's kind of a natural comparison to soccer because they're very similar structures of sports. But in hockey, the number of goals are so much greater that you can kind of have, in addition to goals, you can have assists, you can have penalty minutes, you can have plus minus, which is a concept that really takes like having multiple different units of players coming on and off the playing surface. And that doesn't even happen in soccer all that often.
Right. That's actually like sort of a perfect segue into the beginning of what we talk about when we talk about stats now. So about 10, 15 years ago, a company called Opta started just counting everything in games. That's what powers ESPN Stats and Info. I mean, they sell the data to teams. They sell it to media companies.
And Opta was the first to do it.
They were the first company to do it prominently. There were individuals during the long, dark years of soccer, this guy by the name of Charles Reap, who would sit with, you know, his hand and, you know, in a little notebook and track goals and track passes and
the
stuff
the wing
like that.
Commander, right?
Yes.
Charles Reap, yeah.
What? Is this just like an underground culture to no. which I am not privy? Yeah, Neil's just throwing out nicknames. I feel like I don't have the password to some sort of...
Neil, you took the cape off and you still know nicknames of obscure figures,
Chad,
from soccer statistics.
I want to point out that
from
I
the
wrote,
dark ages, mind you.
I want to point out that I wrote a story about soccer analytics for the 2014 World Cup that you almost certainly edited, in which I talked about Charles Reap. I'm just putting that out
don't
there,
turn
Chad.
The tables on this.
Just yeah, putting that
this
out
is not
there.
About, this is not an indictment of my knowledge. It's an indictment of your knowledge and having too much of
too
it.
Too much of it.
Okay. Anyway.
I'll put the cape down. I had a mini cape. I brought a little mini cape down.
So, yeah. So, like, the question, right, is then what do you do when you have all this numbers that you're now counting, right? Like, do passes matter? Do tackles matter? You know, do interceptions matter? All of these things. And so the starting point was, okay, we're going to start with shots because shots lead to goals. And so counting shots, do shots tell us more about these teams than just goals do?
But doesn't that keep us in the same problem that Kate was talking about earlier, which is it's not everyone's job
like
to
still
take shots?
Half of the roster might not take a shot,
yeah,
throughout
is,
the course of the year. But still, it's a
talking,
step in the right direction.
And we're talking about it at a team level, right?
Right.
So we're talking about how many shots you take and how many shots teams take against you. So in theory, that does incorporate how good a team is defensively, even if we can't assign it to players.
So even at the team level, looking at goals scored and goals allowed is not necessarily sufficient to tell you how good they are because they're just so fluky sometimes, I guess?
That's right. It's better than just looking at wins, losses, and draws, but there's still a ton of noise in goal differential. Shots get better, right? Because there's more of them, but there's still not really a lot of them. Like, I think last year there were maybe 7 players in the Premier League that took 100 shots. Something like that. Hmm. You know, Kobe Bryant takes 100 shots in a week. Or
perhaps a night.
Yeah, right.
If it's his retirement game.
Yeah. So, like, you can get a lot of information about basketball players because they take a lot of shots. You can tell who's a better shooter than another player. You can tell where they take their shots and who's better and what spots on the floor. And you just don't have enough of those shots for individual players to really get that information.
And in basketball, you know, taking more shots is not necessarily a good thing. It's kind of what you do with them. But I get the sense that in soccer, it's actually kind of taking more shots is almost better no matter what. Or like your odds of making them are almost kind of so lucky that you just want to do volume in some ways.
Yes and no. There is a real skill for players getting off shots. That's a real thing. What shot differentials miss is that there are good shots and bad shots, and there are really good shots and really bad shots. And so when we were working with really just shots or maybe shots on target, what you would find is that you would have these outlier teams and you would just sort of shrug and say, oh, well, this team got lucky this season. They won't be as lucky next season. This team got unlucky. And for the most part, overall, broadly, you could get by with that. But it turns out that when you start to work using all this data that you have to measure how good a shot is, how good a chance each individual shot might have of turning into a goal, you get more information.
And
like assigning a percentage or a quality to
exactly.
every shot? But that's sort of subjective.
It is and it isn't. So it is subjective in terms of a lot of things. It's subjective in terms of where everybody's positioned on the field. It's not subjective if you look at, is it a header or is it a shot with your foot? It's not subjective if you look at what kind of pass assisted the shot. And so in those pieces of information, and those are all pieces of information that sort of lead into what we would call expected goals, which is the most advanced stat that's sort of widely used right now, they contain, when you put all of those various pieces of information into the equation, it'll spit out a number that takes a lot of things into account. Not everything. And there's, in any individual shot, you're just looking at the average of that type of shot going in. But it gives you more information than you had just with the pure shot numbers.
Got it.
So give me an example. You have, Messi setting up a shot for Suarez or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Barcelona.
So Barcelona is a perfect example because they take a ridiculous amount of really, really good shots. And so what that means is a lot of times you will find indicators in the data let's pause for a second to say what Opta does is it takes on ball data. So anything that's happening with the ball. So it's not going to have positioning data for players off the ball. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to pick up if a midfielder got left in the dirt by a move and is trailing, you know, 10 yards behind the play. But it'll everything that happens on the ball gives you clues to that kind of stuff. So, for example, if you have a player that has dribbled around the goalkeeper, which will appear in the data, that's a really good clue that the goal is wide open and there's no keeper there. So that gives it a when you're averaging it out, you might say, okay, chances that come up with that in the data beforehand have like a 70% chance of going in, which is sort of as high as you're ever going to get when you're averaging these things together. So a team like Barcelona, they do that a lot, or they do that a lot more than anybody else, or they have other sorts of signifiers that most other teams wouldn't have in that way.
But my point is, okay, so Messi is streaking down the field.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the ball on his foot. Suarez is to his right, and Messi passes it to Suarez. That's recorded in the Opta data because it happened on the ball.
Right.
And then for Suarez's shot, it's going to say, okay, Suarez is taking that shot 18 feet out.
Mm-hmm.
It came from a foot pass from Messi.
Mm-hmm.
Suarez struck it with his off foot or on foot. Like, how granular does it get?
Pretty much that's okay. The level of granularity we're talking about. There's other things as well. You can talk about the speed of the possession, right? So how quickly did Barcelona move the ball from back to front up the field? Because that's also going to give you a clue, like, you know, how likely is it that they bypassed defenders?
So the faster they move the ball, the higher percentage of scoring chance at the end? Because you're thinking they made more direct passes. You think they burned more people because if they had possession for a long period of time, they're probably just...
Right, but not necessarily. I mean, it gets more complicated very quickly because you're looking at, okay, you can play lots of passes in your own defensive half, and then if you advance the ball very quickly from there through the midfield, you can pick up on that. But again, what you're trying to do is look through the data of goals that have been scored in the data set to find these signifiers that say, okay, this goal that we're now picking up in the data is likely to be more or less likely.
Okay. Couple further questions.
Yeah.
So you said we're only tracking on-ball stuff.
Right.
Is that because it's so labor-intensive that you can't track every player?
Is this happening
by hand?
The way Opta works is they have three people per game, basically. One person recording for each team, and then somebody sort of doing quality control oversight.
There's not cameras the way StatCast works in baseball, for example.
Correct. Okay. And there is tracking data and tracking data companies that exist. They are not public like this happened in American sports in the past couple of years. And also there are lots of issues in terms of who owns that data, who uses that data. It's not pooled in the way it often is in U.S. sports.
Okay. I have one more question, then I will cede the floor. Is there a correlation to Neil's point earlier about just like volume shooting. Is there a correlation between shooting, taking shots and scoring more goals?
Yes.
And winning.
I would think so. There is. But
it's similar to basketball, which we talk about a lot here, which is that you want to finish the possession well, that you don't want to waste a possession, especially, I guess, in soccer because there are fewer of them than there would be in basketball.
Well, the thing about soccer is a lot more possessions end in not shots than in basketball. So expected goals is useful because it combines both quality and volume, right? It's a total, right? You're totaling up the expected goals that you have from the amount of shots you've taken. So you can get to the same point a number of different ways. You can take a whole bunch of mediocre shots. You can take a few really good shots. You can take an absolute ton of pretty crummy shots. And then at the end of the day, you're still going to sort of rack up the same expected goal tally or expected goals conceded at the game.
So when you
level.
Talk about this stat, expected goals, like if I was looking at, let's say, EPL, mm-hmm. Man U versus Man City, it would say Man U has this expected goal. Would it incorporate Man City's defense into the expected goal?
It would not incorporate specifically what Man City is doing. The variables that go into it are meant to account for how defenses generally work. So if a shot comes off a cross after a slow move, you would expect that there are lots of defenders in the box defending that cross and that shot. So it would have a lower expected goals tally. But it's nothing specific to what Manchester City are doing in that moment, because we're blind to that information when you're just looking at on ball info.
So when you look at these expected goals, you mentioned that there's like a bunch of different ways to get to the same expected goals. Is there a pattern of sort of things that generate more, like is doing the lots of crummy shots better than doing the just a few good shots? Or is there something strategic where teams can kind of like game the expected goals and maybe produce more from, you know, the same amount of effort? Or is that kind of something that is accounted for already?
So it's because it's a relatively new stat, and because all of the stuff that we're counting is relatively new, we don't have, you know, there are stats in other sports where you can say pretty confidently if they are, you know, if in soccer, if a team scores 10 goals and their expected goal tally is 2, we don't have a, you know, the assumption is they're getting lucky, but we don't have like 100 years of history behind it. So it's not a firm assumption. So we are still at the point where you need to like examine it and say, is expected goals missing something? You know, is what they're doing not being picked up in the data for some reason?
So for example, Barcelona, I think in a game earlier this year, scored 7 goals on only 2.7 expected goals, suggesting perhaps they're
that they
really
created the number of quality chances and chances that they should have had 2 or 3 goals.
Right, unless
and yet,
so they either got lucky or they're, what, better than the
okay,
formula?
So two things with that is that expected goals is pretty darn accurate over long stretches, over big sample sizes. It's not specific, usually, to a shot, a game, a small set of chances. So you would expect a fair amount of noise in a given game. It's more accurate than the other ways we sort of graphically or numerically describe games, but there's tons of noise in those specific measures. So you could have had a set of chances that were, in fact, a lot better than 2.7 expected goals that weren't picked up but would average out in a larger data set. You could also have had not that and just had like a couple of really brilliant moments of soccer that are not the kinds of things you would expect to be repeated.
So that was one game. Now let me tell you what it was over the season. It was 81 goals on 56.7 expected goals. So that maybe suggests that there is something that Barcelona is doing that.
Yes, for sure. And one thing that we can say fairly confidently is that really good players will score more than their expected goals might suggest they should, and really bad players will score less, right? Like that makes sense because expected goals is an average, right? And it's going to average out all of those chances.
So if you're a great finisher.
Right. Now, because there are so few shots, it's very hard to say with any confidence that any individual player is a great finisher. So you can phrase it as, if Sergio Aguero is great at scoring goals, we would expect him to score more than his expected goal total. It's very dangerous to say it the other way and say Aguero is a great finisher because he has more goals than his expected goals total, because in that case, you're really mixing up, you're really saying very firmly something is a skill that could very much sort of just be variance in the numbers.
Okay. You feel good about that?
I feel good about that, but I have a specific question that maybe Neil, or maybe you know off the top of your head. Is this a way to explain why Leicester City won the EPL, that they got lucky, then they had scored more goals than their expected goal total, and there's a ton of variance in what you would have expected from them and what they
over the produced? Second half of the season last year, Leicester City conceded a lot less goals than you would have expected them to.
Conceded.
So it's the defensive side of the ball, but it's right. The same idea, right?
Right?
Their opponents over the second half of the season scored less than you would have expected them to.
Right.
And then the question is, in the specificity of it, why?
Right.
Was it just random stuff? Like, was it really just like, you know, that ball flew off that guy's foot? Really, really weird. Were there other tactical things that are, you know, that will eventually come out in the wash, but were real things that Leicester City were doing over that stretch of time? It's a lot more difficult to say.
Okay. And is it safe to say that those differences between actual and expected goals are driven by only two things, luck and finishing ability, to the extent that it actually is a thing?
Yeah, I think that finishing ability can mean a lot of different
right.
things, But broadly speaking, yes. I mean, is finishing ability how many, you know, how good your bad foot is? Like, that's part of it, right? Like, if you can finish closer to your good foot with your bad foot, then, yeah, you'll probably come in above. But so is maybe taking less shots with your bad foot. I mean, there's a lot that goes into what we sort of loosely define as finishing ability in soccer.
So it could be that I, the superstar soccer player that I am, realize that I've got a weak foot, that I don't have a good – yeah. So that my stronger foot's much better, and so I might torque my body a different way in order to get ready for the shot so that my right foot can hit it rather than the left foot.
Right. Or, you know, maybe you're really tall and a really good header of the ball, but you play on a team that doesn't get the ball to your head a lot. So then the question becomes, we now get really mixed up. How much of this is individual skill? How much of it is team tactics? And we don't yet have really great ways to sort of separate that out.
Before we keep going with Stat School, let's hear a word from one of Hot Takedown's sponsors. Hot Takedown this week is sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They do that by sending you food in the mail, and that food comes with recipe cards. And with those cards, you can figure out what to do with that food. Some of those recipes, for example, roasted pork steamed buns with black garlic mayonnaise and spicy cabbage slaw, seared salmon and fall vegetable hash with apple brown butter dressing. That's the kind of thing that's hard to think up on your own, and the kind of thing that you're perhaps too busy to think up or execute on your own without having the ingredients delivered to you. This is perfect for those who spend a lot of time eating out or at high-end grocery chains, because now you can spend under $10 per person for a Blue Apron meal. Blue Apron has new recipes that are created weekly and not repeated within a year. You can choose your meals from a variety of recipes or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Blue Apron's flexible. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences, and each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card that I mentioned earlier with pre-portioned ingredients, and all of them can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/takedown. Remember, after those free meals expire, the meals are going to be just less than $10 per meal. You're going to love how good Blue Apron feels and tastes, and you're going to love what it's like to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. Go to blueapron.com/takedown. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook.
Okay, before we go to the third wave of this, which is what comes next, I just want to take a breath, take stock of my co-students' feeling about where we're at. Kate, you feeling good about expected goals?
I feel good.
Yeah, you trust it?
No, because there's not enough historical lineage to the data to not to say whether or not there's still it's noisy or not.
Okay, duh. But also then, does that mean we shouldn't have it in the first place?
No, it just means we need to be rigorous and just question it as we move forward.
That is perfect. Absolutely.
Neil, dare I ask how you're feeling about this relatively high-level discussion about chance, probability, and variance?
I feel good.
There we go.
Are you actually seem bored, though. You're all like, are you like G-chatting your friends during this?
No.
It's so rudimentary.
No, I was just trying to look up at our wonderful ESPN True Media the various stats, but Chad was actually on top of it more than I was. He was calling up expected goals versus actual goals like a real champ. I was impressed by that, Chad.
Thanks. It wasn't me.
Were you?
It was our producer.
You were given some crib notes.
All right. So let's segue into the third segment here.
Right.
Which is what comes next, given that what has come before is bad. What is coming now is flawed. So what comes next?
So I think we talked a lot, like sort of the questions you're asking is, okay, how do we link this to individual players, right? And that's really the challenge. And all of this expected goals stuff we're talking about right now is very heavily linked into the times when a shot occurs, right? We're measuring specifically what happens after at the point of a shot. And so what comes next is having a better grasp of how everything else on the field leads up to the point where a shot happens. So we would call it non-shot expected goals, basically, where you're looking at how good is a team playing independently of how often that turns into shots. And the hope is that as you develop that, you find things in the data, all of the stuff that has that isn't part of shots, you know, like the four passes before the assist to a shot, tackles, defensive, you know, defensive statistics, all of these things that lead you to a better understanding of what the game looks like, not, you know, in everything that isn't just a shot.
And that's still turned into expected goals.
You want to turn it into...
Because goals is what matters to win. You sort of work back. So we talked about this with Carl Bialik around tennis at some point, I think, which was like what matters is winning points, not like the basic unit of tennis success is to win a point.
Right.
And so you sort of like work your way towards what stats matter from there.
Exactly.
Here are the basic unit of what matters to win in soccer. Goals. And so you everything backwards or bubbles into that or
right
some
exactly
metaphor,
so, so yeah, right, you step back from goals to shots, how many of those shots turn into goals and why, then you step back from shots to possession and say, okay, how does possession turn into shots, how does it turn into good shots, how does it turn into bad shots, so you can start to understand, oh well, this team had a very high expected goals, but it wasn't really anything they were doing, right? They just sort of lucked into really good situations that ended up being good shots.
And do you think maybe this is like an opportunity to, instead of just, we talked about it earlier, like the volume and the basically getting possession almost as like a proxy from that, and this idea that, oh, the more you possess, the more you can shoot and the more you can turn those into goals. It could be that maybe these tools of the future would help you measure things like, what if a team is just really good at counterattacking? So they don't actually need that much possession,
right,
but they can kind of like generate expected goals for themselves with their defense or something like that.
Right. So we can go back to Leicester City. Leicester City in attack was very, very good at counterattacking. And we can tell because they would have fast attacks that would get down the field and result in a shot, a good shot. What we want to be able to do is to find teams like Leicester City, even if they go through periods of time where those fast attacks don't turn into shots. We want to be able to say that, sure, over the last five games, Leicester City have played poorly and haven't had a lot of shots, but maybe nothing's wrong because they've created the opportunities that should turn into shots.
It would be the equivalent almost of like hard hit balls that happen to be line drive outs or something.
Exactly.
Well, I want to take a quick tangent because I think it might help. Like the one data that seems like lovely and sexy when you're watching it on TV is how far a player has run during a match. That seems like either A, it can feed into this idea that if a team has a collection of players who ran farther than the other team, then maybe they were like working harder, and you would think maybe more possession, and maybe all of that would lead somewhere in the data.
Or hustle.
Yeah, or it could just be like it doesn't matter, it's just random.
But or maybe like, it's a bad thing, right? Like I think about back in hockey where they thought hits are a great thing to track. And then they found out that hits are actually negatively correlated with winning because in order to hit someone, you have to not have the puck. And having the puck is what makes you win.
So maybe you're chasing if you have a higher
chasing the ball causes you. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
And as it turns out, tracking the amount of space that somebody covers, the amount that somebody runs is fraught with all sorts of these problems. It doesn't as a rule correlate to anything good. It doesn't as a rule correlate to anything bad either.
It's just cool to say, oh my god, he ran 6.2 miles during the match.
Yeah, pretty much. And what
fitness level.
And I think it's a very resonant stat, right? Like when I think about running 6 miles
at high speed,
yeah, like
while
I'm
defending,
like, whoa,
like, good
these
for
guys
you,
were really
buddy.
Yeah, they were really,
but it doesn't necessarily correlate to anything.
Right. More than anything else, it correlates to what position somebody plays, right? A midfielder ends up running more than a central defender.
So goalkeepers are lazy. There's
a funny story about a keeper named, I believe it was David James, who learned that they were tracking this stat and would just, when the ball was in the other half of the field, run back and forth across his own goal area to boost up his numbers, and then had a manager come and say to another player on the team, look at how lazy you are, you don't even run as much as the keeper. So, I mean, yeah.
So meaningless.
Not necessarily. There are, and this is also part of what it talks about, what I talk about when I say we don't have a lot of history. We're still finding new ways to use the data we do have to explain the things we can't see in data. So it is distinctly possible that you might come up with a structure where distance run is important. You might be able to say, look, in these tactical setups, these types of players are supposed to run a lot. And hey, look, this winger who is supposed to be covering tons of ground didn't cover tons of ground. Is something wrong? Is he nursing an injury he hasn't told us about? Is he just not good enough for this system? Do we need to change the system? But they're limited uses, not general uses.
Got it.
So how far out are we, would you say, of the next big leap in soccer stats or soccer knowledge, if we haven't exhausted the stats that we already have?
Depends on whether we're talking about public use or private. There are definitely teams right now, either because they have tracking data or because they just are working with non-shot expected goals models, that are doing this not for public consumption. I think in a systemic way out in public, I'm not sure when we're going to really see non-shot based expected goals models, just because data isn't publicly available to make it.
Right, and so it could be years, decades, if ever, depending on the way that...
I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say that the limiting factor here is not our ability to do it. The limiting factor here is the ability to have public data to do it in public with.
And there's no expected moment where EPL teams would outfit their stadiums with cameras the way that NBA teams have done with Sports View.
Some of them have.
But it won't be made public.
They're not sharing.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel like I've learned some things. Folks, do you agree?
Yeah, and it's kind of refreshing, so I can just watch soccer and just be like, "What? I'm just watching soccer."
Because there's nothing.
There's nothing like
there's no deeper thing to think about
other than how far somebody ran and like shots and goals. Like I can just consume the sport. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Me personally, not
well,
you.
I mean, yes, as long as you don't have somebody annoying sitting next to you being like, "Well, that shot actually was only like a 0.03 expected goal."
Am I inviting you over to watch soccer matches with me?
I try really hard not to do that. I don't always succeed.
Okay.
Wow. All right, Mike Goodman, thanks for being our stat man.
You were
for a
great stat man.
Yeah,
thanks that a lot, great. Guys. This was fun.
That was great. All right, Neil, how do you feel having listened to someone else do your job for you?
Oh, I feel great. Yeah, can you come in every week for Hot Takedown?
Neil,
oh, man.
That would mean you weren't
it's
talking
a long
to us,
commute,
Neil.
How's your baseball?
That's actually pretty harsh.
I thought you liked us.
Yeah, I thought this was a special time we got to share with
you. Cool dynamic.
Oh, you know, I mean, the special time for me was just sitting back and you know, being being able to coast and ride
but
on someone's coattails.
You just offered to
your
cede
spot.
Your role. Yeah.
No, I would still be in the room.
Oh, I see.
I just would be doing less work.
Oh, so you just want more laziness.
Yeah,
but still
I want
to
be the keeper.
Us.
Yeah, I want to be the keeper that doesn't run inside the box to boost his stats.
All right. That little metaphor analogy will do it for this week's show. Thanks to Kate Fagan. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Mike Goodman.
Thanks, Chad.
Our podcast producer is Joe Sykes. Our podcast keeper is Jody Avergan. We got production assistance from Tony Chow, Jorge Estrada today. You can email us at podcasts@538.com. We would love to hear what you think. Find us on your favorite podcasting app and iTunes, of course, as well. Subscribe at iTunes.com/538. While you're there, review, rate the show. It helps others discover the program. Thank you to those of you who have been doing so. We will be back next week with a news-oriented Hot Takedown, not another stat school. So fear not if you were, you know, really feeling like you wanted to know what our thoughts were on the pressing issues of the day. We'll be back.
Insert big issue here.
Theme song is by Mystery Mansion. I'm Chad Matlin. Talk to you next time.
Are we really doing a podcast on the news issues of the day?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, back to our
yeah,
regularly scheduled program.
Yeah, usually we're doing news.
Yeah, but I don't know. Somehow it seemed political the way you were saying it. Like
well,
we're
this is
gonna
supposed
weigh
to
in.
Run after Trump wins, and yeah. we've
this
been
is the,
plunged
this
into
is
World
the
War
nuclear
III
option.